Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by my old friend Lockwood Phillips. This week we're talking about the Mueller Report and its aftermath, the ongoing crisis of Brexit, and forthcoming elections in Israel. I hope you enjoy. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, of course, is joining us this evening from London, England, where it's some 4 hours, normally 5 hours, ahead of us, but they have yet to acquire daylight savings there. We'll get to the details of that in a few minutes, because I know that's one of the topics of discussion this afternoon. And as we begin the program, Tom, good evening to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Lockwood. It's always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure here as well. Looking forward to hearing some of the details of the news for the past couple of days, particularly in relationship to the Mueller report. But before we get into that, shall we say, cool topic, or you would say heated, by the way, what's the temperature there in London?
It's in the upper 50s. It's, you know, spring is coming. I've just managed to get the lawnmower back from the shop where it was being sharpened, and so this weekend I'll be out cutting the lawn. You know, the flowers are starting to come out. It's spring. It's the beginning of spring.
A nice beginning, I hope. And of course, we're waiting patiently for it here in the U.S. We've still got some cold weather, but the last vestiges of winter, it looks like. All right, Tom, let's talk about temperate issues. And I'm curious at the outset, because I'm confident this has been covered there in the UK and European press. The Mueller report has been released, and what has been the coverage?
Well, it's been a lot of coverage. I mean, it's the number two story.
Okay, my assumption
is still the number one story.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's a big number two story. And a lot of people are describing it as a huge victory for Trump, with a lot of buts attached to it.
Mm-hmm. A lot of what attached to it?
Caveats.
Oh, buts. B-U-T. Okay, caveats.
Yeah, he won a victory, but.
Ah, yeah. You know, we're still seeing that. We're seeing that here in the States as well. Well, you know, the States here, stateside, we've been pretty concerned with just coverage of the whole Russian collusion issue, and the fact that it's generated so much time and space in publications. And the question here, of course, has been, would the media now accept the fact that the special prosecutor has acknowledged that there was no collusion? Would there be much coverage? And we're not seeing a lot of coverage of that event, but rather, to your point, more coverages of predominantly the opponents, we'll use Democrats, but the opponents on now looking at the caveats. They all the time they were talking about, you know, professing support for and belief in the special prosecutor. And now we're beginning to feel that there's some question about that support. What about there in the UK? What's their attitude about the quality?
I think the attitude here is that their feeling is that Mueller has done a very good job, but that there's been a certain amount of interpretation by the Attorney General, especially over the issue of obstruction. I think gradually people were coming to the conclusion that there wasn't an issue of collusion, that there was pretty clear evidence that the Russians wanted Trump to be elected president, and that they intervened in the election as much as they could to get Trump elected president, and may have had some impact on his election, but how much, it's almost impossible to say, but that the Trump team did not collude with the Russians. However, that there was enough of a sort of question mark over it that there was a possibility that the president tried to obstruct the investigations. But, that's been left open for the attorney general to interpret.
No,
Mueller said it wasn't proven, the obstruction.
Right. And now it's interesting. Now, we're talking, of course, about these are the remarks and comments being made in the media there.
Yeah, I got a few. You know, I mean, the Scotsman, well, there's all sorts of things. I mean, that's the general view.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. But, let's talk about the other aspect of this. And you've got a note here. You've got a note here attacking Democrats, FBI, deep state, et cetera.
There was an interesting editorial in the Scotsman about that.
Uh-huh. What is it they said?
And they're drawing parallels between Trump's talk of vengeance and the deep state, with overtones of McCarthyism.
Hmm.
He's basically going to use his victory, to attack the First Amendment, and all of his opponents. And that would be, you know, in the opinion of the Scotsman, obviously, a huge mistake.
Well,
in fact, might even be playing into the hands of the Democrats.
Well, you know, as a matter of fact, the president has not taken a victory dance on this and, has expressed interest in let's getting on with business. But it's interesting because so many of the Democrats have continued their efforts towards investigations, and we have a variety of congressional investigations, which I'm wondering, is there some opinion that...
There's mixed opinion. You know, the Guardian and the Times, Times was saying the Democrats should back off.
Okay.
They're not doing themselves any favors. The Guardian focuses on the obstruction issue and says that that's not been proven. But at the same time, they also think that the Democrats should back off and wait for a better opportunity. Other things, Anthony Zerger, who's one of the top BBC correspondents, wrote an opinion piece, and he reckons that basically, like what Steve Bannon said, that Trump has now been unchained and he's going to go forward and try and push through all the things that he wants, such as the wall, repeal of Obamacare, and everything else. And that if he does it, that he's going to be handing Nancy Pelosi a big gift, especially Obamacare.
As a matter of fact, that is one of the topics that's in the press today, because a federal court has, in fact, overturned the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. And there are many in the political sphere who are saying that that is a, if you will, an opportunity for the Democrats. Of course, the other aspect of it is it may force the Republicans, which is the other side of this equation, to do something aggressive and worthwhile in the area of health care. So that has been part of the topics of discussion here.
I think the issue is going to be over pre-existing conditions, isn't it?
Right. Yes, it is.
That's what Anthony Zerker says. You know, if I think the court in Texas, the federal court in Texas said that, pre-existing conditions clause should be thrown out.
Right.
And that, the Trump administration has indicated that they would support that when previously they had said that anything they put in a place of Obamacare would support pre-existing conditions.
And may still do that. The difference is that the president would like to see this in a different form. I want to move to another item with you, Tom, before we go to the break. And this, of course, related to the Mueller report and the reaction among the European leadership. Now, does this in any way influence, enhance, or restrict the support or interest on the part of European leaders, that be Prime Minister Theresa May, President Emmanuel Macron, of course, we always talk about Chancellor Merkel in Germany. But will this in any way sort of clear the air so that these national leaders, international leaders, will feel comfortable with one another? Or maybe they've just been comfortable all along and it's just, if you will, a sideshow?
It's difficult to say because, Trump has no chemistry at all with the major European leaders. He does with some of them, the East Europeans. He has a chemistry with them. But then they are of, you know, the same cut from the same political, cloth.
Mm-hmm.
But the French, the Germans, the British, the Dutch, the Scandinavians, they don't like Trump.
Right.
And I think it's going to be very difficult. We've got coming up next week, it's another item, but we can mention this, and that is NATO's 70th birthday
right.
on the 4th of April. And there's going to be celebrations in Washington.
Okay.
And they were going to be at head of government level.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, the celebrations have been downgraded to foreign minister level because they're concerned that President Trump would not behave himself.
Wow. All right. Well, and of course, this is an opportunity, of course, with you've got heads of government there that the president would attempt, if you will, to push for other agenda other than just NATO. I want to talk
yes,
to.
Yes, it's meant to be a celebration,
right.
And you know, you don't want things ruining it.
quick question for you before I get to the NATO. We'll let's touch on that for a few more moments related to the president's activities there in Europe. And I'm wondering, with this Mueller report being concluded, will that remove it from, as you said earlier, it was the second most important news item in the European community, Brexit being the most. Will this go away, do you think, in news coverage?
No, I don't think it will, because it was, I think, De Veld who said that he still has unanswered questions coming out of the Southern District of New York.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it's still hanging over him. And there's also the issues, you know, of ethics and various other things and some of his policy decisions.
All right. Now, the other question, let's go back to NATO here for a moment. And, of course, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio talking with us from London, England. The portion has been pre-recorded. Tom, with about a minute and a half to go here, let's talk about NATO. Of course, the president, that is President Trump, has expressed a concern that more support was required from the other NATO members. The 70th birthday is going to be celebrated. You said April when?
April the 4th.
April 4th. And it's been downgraded to really just second-level emissaries that will be in attendance. My question to you is, how supported is NATO by the European community?
Oh, very.
Okay.
It's very supportive. But they are worried.
Mm-hmm.
They're worried about lack of American support forcing them to be less supportive.
Okay. Now, question for you.
I know that sounds a bit strange. But basically, they are concerned that lack of American support will force them to basically set up more European-oriented only operations in order to replace
right.
the American commitment, which will weaken NATO.
Okay. And then finally, there has been a quick question because I've got to go to a break, but there has been a question about a European force. Is that still on the table?
It's on the table, but you know, people are fighting against it because the ultimate arbiter in any conflict would be the United States.
Interesting.
And so you want the United States on your side. So on one hand, you know, you may not be happy about some of the policies. You may not be happy with the president.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, you need them if you're going to be successful.
All right. We're going to we'll move back to that a little later on if we get time. I've got to go to a break. We're joined by Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Coming up, a topic we've all been talking about for quite some time, Brexit, here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, joining us from London, England. And again, he is some 4 hours ahead of us, yet to celebrate daylight savings there, but will be soon. But some 4 hours ahead of us, so this portion of the program has been pre-recorded. Tom, we were talking a few moments ago, of course, about the events in the U.S., and you mentioned that the Mueller report was the second most read and reported on story, particularly in the UK, and I'm sure in the rest of Europe, Brexit being the number one story. And my goodness, there's a lot going on with Brexit. By the way, you have a deadline in 3 days, I think it is. 2 days.
Yes.
2 days.
We do.
Yeah.
But they've gotten permission to extend it, assuming that people vote on Mrs. May's deal, which may or may not be put to Parliament. Everything is just so murky. You know, you just can't see where you're going. Today they're having what's called indicative votes in the House of Commons. They've never done this before. In the entire history of the British Parliament, they have never had indicative votes.
Now, let me interrupt you.
The commentators say this is the most historic day in the British Parliament.
Okay, let me interrupt.
Except maybe the day before.
Right.
Or maybe the day before that.
All right, let me interrupt you here. I'm trying to several times. My apologies. Indicative vote. What exactly is an indicative vote? I think I have thought what it might be, but I'd rather have you give us the definition.
Okay, because nobody can agree on the way forward. No one course of action has enough support within Parliament. They have thrown it open for different people to just basically put their ideas on the table to be voted. And there are 12 of them, 12 different ideas which are going to be put forward on the table and all voted on. And the idea is that by voting on these votes, they will indicate, thus the word indicative, mm-hmm. indicate a way forward, you know, some sort of combination of ideas around which Parliament could coalesce and reach a consensus.
Now, it is one of the issues we've talked about numerous occasions, Tom, and again, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon in London, England. The topic has been industry, the economy, and of course, you've shared with us on several occasions that major businesses that are relocating. First question, are they still in the process of relocating, or is there a sense now that, quite frankly, this is not going to be as, as severe as was once thought in light of the fact that both the EU does not want it to happen, as well as many in the UK. So I'm getting this sort of softening of the impact of Brexit, but maybe.
Well, you're wrong.
Okay.
You're wrong. I mean, basically, people beginning to say that, you know, there are a lot of people saying that no deal now, and falling off the cliff edge, as they say, is become almost a certainty. That, you know, I'm not of that opinion. I'm still hopeful. But a lot of people in the European Parliament are saying, yeah, well, we've got a plan for no deal, and it's going to be rough.
Right.
It's going to be really rough.
All right. What is the future for Prime Minister May? There's some talk that she has to announce her willingness to step down, or she has to step down in order for any of these.
And she's refusing to do it.
Okay.
She sees herself as having a duty to stay in office and see the country through this crisis, and that changing prime ministers at this stage, changing prime ministers in midstream from one horse to another in the middle of a battle while at full gallop would be a mistake.
Very interesting observation on your, or shall we say, metaphor on your part. Let's talk about this, Tom, in relationship to the European Union as well. What is there? And by the way, we talked about the European Union and its structure, but what about the leaders within the European countries associated with the European Union? I've mentioned Emmanuel Macron, Chancellor Merkel,
they are
others.
All holding firm to the EU line.
Mm-hmm.
They've agreed a policy and nobody is breaking ranks. And so they are holding firm. It's the British Parliament that can't decide. The 27 member countries are all united behind an agreed plan.
Now, one of the opportunities here is a potential of revoking Article 50, which forces the departure of the UK. Who would make that decision?
It doesn't force the departure. It's the exact opposite. It keeps the UK in the EU if you revoke Article 50. They've had a petition It has nearly 6 million people have signed it. Now, let's put that in perspective. That's 10% of the population have signed this petition.
Okay, population of the UK?
Of the UK. Okay.
But wait a second. Who has to make the decision on Article 50?
The government and parliament have to make the decision. And the government has responded to the petition by saying, we don't care what you want.
Okay.
We don't care how many people sign the petition. We've had a referendum, and that's that.
All right, but here's the question. Article 50 is written by the European Union, is it not? And by the way,
Article 50 is Article 50 is an article in the Treaty of Lisbon.
Okay.
And basically, it just says that it just means that if a country invokes Article 50, they start the process of departing from the EU. If they revoke Article 50, then they have stopped the process of leaving the EU.
All right. Here's the question for you, Tom. Related to Article 50, there is talk that there might be some opportunities. And, of course, one of the big issues, I think, is the backstop, the Irish backstop. Is there any solution that would temper that?
At the moment, there's nothing on the horizon. Okay. The problem with that is that basically the Irish do not want a hard border because if there's a hard border, it basically nullifies the Good Friday Agreement, which is very important to the peace of the island of Ireland, both north and south.
Right.
And what has happened is that the only party represented in Parliament, in the British Parliament, is the Democratic Unionist Party. Mm-hmm. And they are the Protestant Party, who are very much opposed to unification with North and South. And so they want a hard border.
Mm. Okay. It's politics.
And they basically hold the balance of power now.
Right. It's politics within politics. All right.
Yes.
Final question before we move to the next item, and we're going to go to a break here in a moment. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. And Tom, the topic of the, of course, the economic impact on Great Britain. What about the economic impact on the rest of the European Union? Are they equally feeling stressed by this?
Yes, they are feeling stressed. But a lot of people, the Brexiteers said, oh, well, this is going to hurt Europe a lot more than it hurts us.
Mm-hmm.
No, it won't, because Europe is 27 countries.
Right.
And so they can, you know, absorb the shock, so to speak, amongst the 27. Whereas the United Kingdom is one country.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to hurt the UK a lot more. It's going to hurt Europe, but it will hurt Europe.
Right.
There's no doubt about it. There are manufacturing lines where bits of cars are manufactured in the UK and they're sent off to Germany to be finished and vice versa. There are markets.
Right.
And everything else. But the biggest impact will be on the UK. And because it has a big impact on the UK and will have an impact on the EU, believe me, it will have an impact on the rest of the world.
World economy. All right. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. Viewpoints around the world.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. The British government, the Brexit process, and Parliament are all being held to ransom by 10 MPs who represent a narrow sectarian community who, since the 17th century, have used every dirty trick imaginable to cling to their precarious political perch in Northern Ireland. The Democratic Unionist Party, or DUP, could care less about the rest of Britain. In fact, they don't even consider the majority of the Northern Ireland electorate who voted to remain in the EU. Every political decision that they make is judged through the prism of the Protestant ascendancy and political separation from Catholic Southern Ireland. That is best achieved through the tightest possible links with mainland Britain on the other side of the Irish Sea. The EU, and specifically Theresa May's withdrawal agreement, threatens those links. The tale's an old one. The English had been in and out of Ireland since Norman times. But in the 17th century, the battle for dominance in Ireland was injected with an incurable religious virus. England broke with Rome, and Ireland remained steadfastly loyal to the Vatican. Protestant England now had a God-given right to conquer Ireland, and the Catholic Irish didn't help by supporting anyone who opposed the Protestant cause in England and Scotland. After a series of successive military victories, the English concluded that the best way to maintain political power in their troublesome Catholic neighbor was to kick the Catholics off their land and give it to Protestant settlers. Fast forward to the 20th century. The Catholic Irish had persuaded London to let them break from Great Britain and establish the Irish Free State, except for the Protestant-dominated Ulster plantation. The Protestant majority in the six counties armed themselves and threatened a civil war if they are broken away from the United Kingdom. Westminster responds by splitting the country. Two-thirds becomes the Irish Free State, and the northern third remains in the United Kingdom. Northern and southern Catholics were seriously unhappy. The Protestants concluded that the only way to ensure that they remained part of the United Kingdom was to politically and economically oppress the Catholic minority in Northern Ireland. The result? The Catholic minority, led by Sinn Féin and the IRA, eventually revolted. The Troubles began in 1969 and cost 3,500 lives. They ended with the 1998 Good Friday Agreement, which established political power sharing between the DUP and Sinn Féin to govern the province. It also created a vague promise of the possibility of a united Ireland at some indeterminate date in the dim and distant future when both sides had learned to set aside centuries of hate and mistrust. Peace settled on Northern Ireland. But there was an unhappy faction in the DUP. They disliked the vague promise of unification and set out to undermine it. That faction is now led by party leader Arlene Foster, and she sees Brexit as both a threat and opportunity in the battle to keep Northern Ireland tied to mainland Britain. Neither Westminster, the Dublin government, Sinn Féin, or the rest of Europe want to see a return to the Troubles in Northern Ireland. That is why they are united in their opposition to a hard border between the northern and southern halves of Ireland. A hard border, they argue, would negate the vague promise of eventual reunification, which keeps Irish Catholic hopes alive. Denial of that hope threatens to drive them back to violence. Theresa May's EU withdrawal bill not only keeps the border open, it opens the possibility of moving even faster towards unification. Anathema to the DUP. Since the 2017 general election, May's government has depended on the Democratic Unionists to stay in power. It is a pact which the Prime Minister must seriously regret, as the DUP has blocked and will continue to block her EU withdrawal bill. 10 far-right MPs, representing a sectarian group based on centuries of religious prejudice, have become the tail that wags the British lion.
We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio joining us from London, England. And as I reminded you earlier in the program, this portion has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule, although it is some 4 hours ahead of us. So it's going on 11 o'clock his time. That's 11 p.m. But later we'll talk about this future of daylight savings there as well. Tom, we were chatting briefly a few months ago, and more than briefly, about Brexit and the impact of Brexit. We're going to come up on some issues here related to issues, military issues. Talking very quickly about NATO and the fact that this is about to celebrate its 70th birthday. The fact that Brexit is underway, does that have any impact on NATO whatsoever at this point?
No.
Okay. I just was curious because next item on the list, Israel. And this is a big issue. And I'm wondering how is this being written about, perceived, and told there in the European community?
Yeah. The big issue, of course, is the Golan Heights, mm-hmm. But also Hamas. And the election. So the three interlocking issues here. As you know, Trump has recognized the Israeli annexation of the Golan Heights. The EU has issued a statement saying that it does not recognize and deplores the American recognition of the Golan Heights. And so has every individual member of the European Union, including the UK. So they are really very much opposed to it. Other thing is that this comes, he couldn't have timed this better for Netanyahu. Netanyahu is under the cosh in electoral terms. Mm-hmm. He's got an election coming up in 2 weeks' time. It's neck and neck, because of the fact that he's under investigation for corruption and everything else.
So here's so quick question for you, because I want to move other items. Of course, the election in Israel, the question goes to the concerns related to the peace in the Middle East, which is, well, quite frankly, not all that peaceful. And we're going to get into the topic of Kurdistan and ISIS and what have you. But is there some concern that this area may suddenly become distressed once again, and we may be looking at it?
Yes, they think that the recognition of the Golan Heights, the move of the embassy to Jerusalem, the possible annex, what Netanyahu's talking about now is annexing the disputed areas of the West Bank, mm-hmm. if he wins the election. All these things are, potential very large straws on the camel of the Arab-Israeli conflict. They're not seen as helping. Certainly, if you think that you have to get the Palestinians on board as part of any negotiated settlement, they are point blank refusing to speak to anyone from the mm-hmm. Trump administration and anyone from Israel.
All right, let's talk about this in relationship to the Middle East and the influence this may have. We have, of course, I use this with caution, the conclusion of the fight with ISIS, or ISIL, as some call it, Daesh.
Pick your name.
All right, my question to you is this, now that that goal is no longer of concern, is there concern now that then the internecine warfare that has been existing in the Middle East will pick up? Iraq, Iran, Syria.
First of all, there's a report just come out of BBC Monitoring saying that, ISIS, ISIL, Daesh is, by no means defeated.
Right. It's asymmetrical. And that's a term.
They estimate, this BBC Monitoring, they estimate that about 20,000 jihadists in Syria and Iraq mm-hmm. are still there. They've just been absorbed. They've melted back into the community. Now, what's different is, and also they have operations in Nigeria, Somalia, the Philippines, Afghanistan, Egypt. Apparently, they're planning offensives in Tunisia, and also one in Nigeria. What was I going to say? They've changed in that they are no longer territorially based.
Mm-hmm. It's called
they're more cell based, way Al Qaeda is.
Right. It's asymmetrical warfare. Real quick question. I want to move to. Xi Jinping's visit to Europe. Kurdish proposal for the jihadist, very quickly. What's the future there?
Yeah, no, that's very interesting. Because the problem is, what are you going to do with these jihadists that you've captured?
Right, what are they going to do?
And a lot of them, you don't want to send them back to the countries from whence they came.
So?
Because they could become terrorists within the country they're sent back to.
So what is the alternative?
Their proposal is to set up an international court.
Okay.
Deal with them.
And very quickly, is that being well received?
Yes, I think it is.
Okay. All right. I wanted to get that out very quickly. Let's go to the visit to France and also to Italy. Italy signing up for a Belt Road Initiative with GP.
Yeah, they'll do anything for money these days.
Right.
With the Italian economy is up the creek without the paddle.
Uh-huh.
They're not going anywhere fast because they don't have a paddle. And they will sign any deal with China or anyone else who might be able to help them out.
Mm.
And so they really rolled out the red carpet for Xi Jinping, mm-hmm. and said, we'll do whatever you want in the form of the Belt Road Initiative. Don't forget that Genoa and Venice were final ports of call for the old Silk Road. Mm-hmm. We'd love to be part of the new Silk Road.
Now, with that said, and of course, we've seen this situation in Africa, you become basically a tenant of China. They become the landlord, although they don't necessarily own the land. Is there some concern that Italy may find itself, using the description, making a deal with the devil?
Not among the Italians, who, you know, are quite prepared to make a deal, as I said, with anyone at the moment.
Wow.
Because they're in severe economic difficulties. It's a bit like during World War II when Churchill, when he struck a deal with the Russians, mm-hmm. or the Soviets, to fight against Hitler. They said, isn't it a bit like making a deal with the devil? And he said, you know, I don't care who I'm making a deal with. It's going to beat the Germans.
Right. So, okay. Now, the other aspect of this, and I love this, this note, we're talking about President Macron of France rolls out a red carpet. And then you've got with holes in it for Xi Jinping of China.
Yeah, he said, we'll talk to you about your Belt Road Initiative, but I'm going to talk to you about a few things too.
So he used this as a.
I think that's probably the right approach. Be open to new ideas, but in his case, there were several caveats he attached to his red carpet. He's concerned about Huawei. He's concerned about the Chinese attitude towards intellectual property.
Mm-hmm.
He's concerned about steel dumping and human rights.
Okay.
And he made all those quite clear to Xi Jinping.
Now, what did that have any influence on the conversation, or did Chinese premier just simply accept that and go on about business?
Well, it does have an influence because France is, up there with Germany,
okay.
as a major power within the EU. And so any trade deals will not be negotiated between France and mm-hmm. China so much as they will be between the European Union and China.
Good point. Very good point. And that, of course, is part of the issue here. We're going to get back to some other items here in just a moment. We have joining us, of course, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And yes, it's some 4 hours ahead of us. As a matter of fact, they are going to deal with the issue of daylight savings here in just a moment. We're going to hear about that in this final segment of Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And this is the final segment of our conversation, always the one with a little bit of a twist. And actually, we have several items here that I want to touch on with our guest, Tom Arms. Again, this portion has been pre-recorded. Tom, let's start with Mexico demands a Spanish apology for conquistadors.
Yeah, as you probably know, the conquistadors were not nice people. You know, they murdered and burnt villages, and Montezuma was mm-hmm. done away with and everything else. And they were very nasty to the Indians. And so the new Mexican president, Obrador, has said to the Spanish, we want an apology. And the Spanish has said, why do you want to do that? Because we got good relations. Why do you want to, try and make them sour by insisting on having an apology? And of course, the problem with these apologies about historical misdeeds is that if you apologize, it opens the door to so many other things,
right.
Like compensation.
Reparations, yes.
Reparations.
Yes, yes. And we're going to be watching that with a great deal of interest here in the States. Is there much going on the over and under, we call it in betting, on the possibility of such a apology coming forward?
I don't think anyone's opened a book yet, but
okay.
I'll watch that.
All right, be interested in that. Let's talk about another item, opening the book on this one. European Parliament voting on daylight savings time?
Yes. Well, for years, the European Union has had an imposed daylight savings time stretching across all its members.
Uh-huh.
So that there was Atlantic time, which included Portugal and Ireland and the United Kingdom. There was Central and Eastern Europe, basically West European time, mm-hmm. which was France, Spain, Italy, Scandinavia. And then there was Eastern and Central European time, which was Eastern Europe. So it had three time zones, much same as the United States. But people were complaining because not only is it east-west, but it's north-south right. as well. People in the north were complaining about it, and people in the south weren't complaining. And so yesterday, European Parliament said, all right, each country can set their own.
Well, no.
If you don't want to have daylight savings time, you don't have to have it. If you do, you can have it all year round, and so forth and so on.
Wow. We probably should have the European Union or the European Parliament here in the States because it's become a national issue. Now, we do have several states that Arizona is one of them, as a matter of fact, that I think does not recognize daylight savings. So a very interesting development there with the European Parliament. By the way, I'm curious, what was the vote? Was it unanimous?
I don't know. I'll be honest, I don't know.
All right. Well, let's go to the final item of the day.
You got me to be honest.
It's nice to have you from moment to moment to be honest with us, Tom Arms of LookAhead.com and LookAhead Radio. Uri Geller calls on a twice daily brainwave attack against Brexit. First off, a lot of people are not necessarily savvy to who Uri Geller is.
Okay,
and of course,
in the 70s and 80s, yeah. Uri Geller was famous for bending
forks.
Spoons, allegedly, with his brain power.
Right. Was it spoons or forks?
Just look at the spoons or scissors or any piece of metal right. and right. bend them to his will, and they would just sort of melt in front of your eye. And he was on television quite a bit. He's an Israeli-British national, dual national. He's living in Israel at the moment. But he is very, very anti-Brexit. And he's actually from Theresa May's constituency. And so he wants to set up a mass telepathy of people using brain waves twice a day, all at the same time, to direct their thoughts to number 10 Downing Street. Do not do Brexit.
The real question for you, Tom, I've got to bring this all the way back to the earlier conversation. By whose clock would we be using, is considering this daylight
that's
savings?
That's a problem. I don't think he's thought of that. I'll write him a note.
Okay. And by the way, what would he use as his form of telepathy for making sure that everybody's doing this, just out of curiosity? Does he have, you know, these brainwaves, they would all have to... Well, you know what, Tom? It would pose as a great challenge to the Internet.
It would. It would.
This has potential. I like
yeah.
this. Uri Geller calls on twice daily brainwave attack against Brexit. By the way, has he determined the time of day by any chance?
I think 11 o'clock and 4 o'clock.
Okay.
11 a.m. and 4 p.m.
The question, of course, then it goes back to based on daylight savings, things of that nature. As always, a real pleasure and fun to have Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio with us here on Viewpoints Around the World. Tom, as always, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Lockwood.
Until next week, here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.